I'm with Dr. Raju. Today is 5:29, and we are here to discuss witness conscience on this Memorial Day. Thank you, Dr. Raju.
Thank you, Eric, for this opportunity to reflect on some of these concepts and ideas and a way to clarify these verbal expressions. Question is, what is witness conscience? Now, when we say witness conscience, we have two expressions there. One is witness, another is conscience. When we talk of conscience, that is condition, sometimes conscience condition. And when we begin to talk about conscience free from any condition, that is another way of talking about conscience. What is condition conscience? Condition conscience is that conscience which is surrounded and guided and motivated by interests which are outside of our seeing, perceptions, thoughts. We make an objectivity out of it as an observer. There is an observed. So, thinker and then the object about which we think. So when we make such dichotomies or even multichotomies, depending on our own interest, then we talk about conscience, that is condition. The essential source for conditioning is that dichotomizing process itself, which means I and you. When we begin to identify another person with reference to whom I am either talking or interacting. So a relational structure is there. Or I, you, and something else, that. Again, we have extended this factorizing of I and you by bringing in the third factor. So we can make this type of a structure more and more multiplied. It all depends on our own interests. Sometimes we would like to reduce. There is what is known as reductionism, as I understand. For manageability, we would like to talk about only two. We would like to extend it to three. Some people extend it to four, some people extend it to five. So depending on our purpose of investigation and explication of the nature of reality, we start from I'm speaking numerically, from zero to one, to two, to three, to four, and so on. Infinitely we can enumerate these things. So when we talk of conditioned conscience, then we are accepting an interest-bound division of pluralizing the reality. Then there is conscience, and then the plurality. That is known as conscience, that is condition. Now when I begin to look at conscience, not in terms of any of those roles or interests that I am involved, then there is the witness role is there. So that we may call it as witness conscience, meaning that I am not participating in any particular role in performing any type of tasks or playing any type of a role, responsibility. But I am free from those. I am observing only. That is also a role, but I would like to assume that role of observation. Plurality is there, interplay is there, transactions are there, but I am not a party to it. I don't have any interest there, but I am an observer. That is the notion of witness conscience. So we use the word witness simply to communicate the way in which our participation in life we are familiar. For example, in legalistic terms, a witness is called. There the role of the witness is simply to report what is happening to the judge or the jury. That person is not a part of any role play there. So we are using that type of a neutrality or free from interest and an interest only to report what I have seen, not, without adding my own biases either to protect or to distort. That is the assumption there. That's why that witness conscience, when we say, both in our business, family, or in legalistic system. So we have used that terminology there. But when we come to understand the nature of the witness consciousness, witness conscience, we have to free ourselves from that model. That is, the nature of the I or the me that I am is not to play any role, including the witness role. I am not a witness like the legalistic concept of witness. But then I am that very nature of being, unstructured, undefined presence. So that is the notion of witness conscience. Witness conscience is that awareness of that experience which is so open that it accommodates everything. It doesn't delimit itself or exclude anything. Analogically speaking, if we look at the sky, the space that we have in a house or a room, or the space that is outside of the house, and the space which accommodates both this house space as well as the outside space. So if we go on thinking of the space, unconditioned space, we can come to an idea that the nature of this space, unconditioned, either by geographical or by any engineering or any type of a interplanetary or any type of a space or international, these are all conditioning factors. So the nature of the being is that unconditional space, and when we begin to understand the nature of the being in that unconditional way, that is the conscience. And we call that witness conscience only to illustrate that that being is capable of freeing oneself from all these conditionalities and be there. And always, the very nature of the consciousness, conscience, is to be. because its very nature of the conscience is to be, then it is the base and the light that provides knowledge of every other kind of a thing. But that itself is not bound by any of these structures and conditionalities. That is the notion of witness conscience. So, given this understanding of witness conscience, what is the purpose of witness conscience? Next question. The purpose is to provide a motivation for any being to expand one's own nature of conscience in such a way that it becomes freed from all bindings, all bondings, all bondage, all conditionings. That is the goal. That is freedom. So the purpose of witness conscience is to be the freedom itself. Therefore, there will be no demand on me, neither there will be a demand from me on the other. So that dichotomy itself is rooted out. So when there is no dichotomy, there is no division, then absolute peace is there. So peace is the freedom, peace, these are all the values that a human being has to understand. So in order to provide that understanding and be that peace itself, be that freedom itself, these notions of witness conscience is provided. So that is the purpose of witness conscience. That means once and for all, one should be free from all distractions, all distortions, all deviations, anything that disturbs. What is it that disturbs then? What is it that makes us make classification, division, relation? It is our own interest, something other than my own true being. So when we begin to bring in the interest, which is an alien factor from my own being, then I am trying to import into my being those alien factors and disturb my own being. People who have done that for a long time aspire to be free from all those distractions and disturbances, to be their own being. And in order to achieve that particular purpose of freedom, this notion of witness conscience is being presented. Then, the third question, what are the scriptural sources? Scriptural sources, when we say, I am only familiar with Sanskritic Upanishadic tradition mostly, and other language traditions also. So I base my observation based on those either writings or even teachings and so on. There is one Upanishad called Brihat Aranyaka Upanishad. And then there is another Upanishad called Aitareya Upanishad. These two, I confirm myself now. There are other Upanishads also which talk about this witness conscience. In Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, there is a conversation between Yajnavalkya, a husband, and Maitreyi, a wife. They begin to discuss about the nature of the self, the nature of the being, like who I am, where I came from, these kinds of fundamental questions of the nature of reality, reference to the I, its thoughts. And then it also later on refers to the other, or the you. So the multiplicity that we see around has to be resolved in such a way that there is nothing but that one alone. Ekam eva, Sanskrit word, ekam eva. Only one. Advitiyam Brahma. That is, Advitiya means one without a second. And that is Brahma. That is the reality. So the reality is that which is one without a second. So the notion of witness conscience is brought in to communicate that one without a second. The nature of the I is one without a second. For that, they have used various other terminologies. For example, in Aitareya Upanishad, the expression is prajnanam brahma. Brahma here refers to the nature of reality. That nature of reality is prajna. Prajna. Prajna refers to the conscience that is the basis for everything. Everything expresses itself from that conscience. So that is prajnanam brahma. Another terminology they use is prajna netra. Netra means eye. Prajna refers to this conscience, this awareness, this consciousness. That itself is the I. So that is there. Nobody can be escaping from its sight. And they have used some analogical illustrations, bringing in the sun. The sun, as the sun shines, every object is seen in the light of the sun. So sun is the shining source for every object. Similarly, there is that conscience in every being which shines the nature of reality. And it appears to be plural, but that appearance is only because of our interest, because of my interest. Therefore, they have said, if a person would like to be that witness conscience, one has to prepare oneself to be that. And that is the next question, I think, here, or the other one. I will come to that. How does one practice witness conscience in day-to-day life? Or how does one practice witness conscience in retreat? And how does one practice witness conscience when facing difficulties? These are all the situations of plurality, where that the very nature of that conscience, which is absolute, which is one without a second, appears to be disturbed by the pluralities. That is where I am, by my practice or by my habits, I have become a part of this plurality. I have defined my identity with reference to these relative structures and relations. And because of that acceptance, usefulness of that, I would like to maintain that security, that usefulness within the structure. But I am experiencing the contradictions, the conflicts, and the undesirability of that. So this is where the whole process of practicing and methods to free ourselves from those type of conditioning thoughts. So whether it is retreat or whether it is in everyday life that we have to live, or whether we are in some crisis situations, all of them reflect the nature of our being as being conditioned, whereas my innate aspiration is to be the freedom itself. So on the one hand, I would like to be the freedom itself. On the other hand, I experience conflicts based on divisions, based on delimitations, different roles I have to play, and different type of interest that I have to cultivate. Those are the situations that bring about the violation of that conscience, unconditioned conscience, which is witness conscience. Then, how do I practice this? Here, when we begin to say about the practice, we have to recognize the contribution of religious disciplines also, whatever may be the religious tradition. Religious traditions have been one way of helping human beings to deal with these type of distractions and conflicts and disturbances and all that. But for some people, those religious practices may not have any meaning. For some people, it may mean something different. Therefore, we are looking for something else. So, then, we have disciplines, purely analytical disciplines, which root out any place for any supernatural or divine or something which we don't understand. They do not want to make that as a factor. Every religion admits divinity, admits some supernatural, miracle, these kinds of things. So for people who would like to free themselves from such type of notions, then they have other methods they have to follow. That is where the Sankhya, as you mentioned here, that is Sankhya and Advaita Vedanta, they become an important way of looking at these practices. In Sankhya, we are given a scheme for accounting for the structural relations by enumerating identifiable patterns or factors. So we account for any event which occurs within space and time and so on by looking at these patterns and factors. Therefore, there is no need for a supernatural or a divine. So this is how they remove the notion of the divine and the supernatural or notion of God and all. In Advaita Vedanta, while they appreciate and recognize this factorizing and removing everything and accounting everything, but still there is a factor which I cannot account. You may call it random or you may call it unresidual. So they concede there are factors which we cannot account for everything. And then they have introduced some terminology to deal with that factor. One of the famous terminology is Maya. Maya has been introduced to explain uncertainties, variabilities which we cannot account, So Advaita Vedanta works with that term of Maya. So the while the witness conscience is recognized as a goal, as an object, from the situation where I am bound by these pluralities which they call Maya, one has to free oneself from the Maya, therefore that witness conscience becomes the reality. So how do I free myself from the Maya? First thing is to recognize it is a Maya, to respect that as a Maya, and to play whatever role I have to play as a Maya. Now, what role I will play, how I will play, those are all details again. Some people take the extreme role of, I am not playing any role in the marketplace. I am not a producer, I am not a consumer. I am not an accumulator. I don't accept any responsibility to run a role for securing a family or a state or even the country and the people. No. So this kind of an abandonment is one way by which they have tried to remove all those role obligations. So which means their survival itself becomes a very, very risky situation. But they don't care. What happens, it happens. Even if some bad thing happens, I am hurt, I die, that also is okay. If I am living, if something very useful and comforting that is coming to me, that is also okay. So this type of an openness to accept whatever events that may happen around me and the consequences of that events. This is one type of a style of life in Advaita Vedanta people have taken. My own feeling is, in Advaita Vedanta, when we talk of witness conscience, this is the only way by which a person can be rooted in that liberated or condition-free conscience. All other roles are compromises. All other roles have to have another support, a religious support, a God support, a saint support, even the support of what we call the scriptures. So those are all dependent. Dependency is there. But when once develops this type of a lifestyle, freeing oneself from all those dependencies, that person is the witness conscience. That person is the living example of the witness conscience. All others may take their own time, but yet it is a concession, compromise. So that is what I understand. Now, how to practice this witness conscience in facing difficulties in practice of in retreat and other things? When we say that, we are day to day, those are all compromises. I have to play a role. The moment I have to play a role, conditioning comes. What do I do? Then, one way they have said is, you accept everything as the very expression of that conscience. However undesirable for me or however difficult it is for me, accept that. Religious people have a great capacity to practice that. For example, everything is given by God. I adore. Even difficulties come, that is also God's. I will play my role. I will have to play whatever role I have to play. As a warrior, I have to go, I have to kill, and I have to... But that is the role that has been given to me. This is God's work. So this way, in religious terms, people have made use of the practices to face every day-to-day difficulties and crises and so on. But for those who don't have that type of an appreciation and an inclination, analytical approaches are the only way. Again and again we have to reflect on it, we have to sort out these things, either by own personal individual reflection or to exchange with another one who is at another stage of that type of a progress, so that I check it out and then take courage and or make adjustments and go on. So that is where the fellowship and then dialogues with the people of such experimental or practitioners becomes an important method of dealing with these things. To seek such people also is difficult. Why it is difficult? One, if that person is also playing the same or similar role that I am playing, then it is easy for exchange of experiences. Terminology is common, sociology is common, environment is common. But all people do not have that type of an interest. Therefore, we have to search out for a rare person of that type. So that difficulty is there. Another difficulty is, I am playing a role, a particular situation, but another person who has been practicing these things has another background, and therefore I have to make transformations from what I am, where I am, understanding it, and understanding that person's experience and then putting it back to mine. So that is a great difficulty. One of the greatest difficulty would be when we see monks or sannyasins who have been practicing in their own way. When they come to the city and give a talk, I have to take care of my family, my business, my whatever I have been doing. Then it doesn't fit in. So it takes quite a lot of time for us to take those ideas and then again make our own designs and to help ourselves to transform. That difficulty is there. So this, in summary of my